You're listening to Your Financial Choices on WDIY Allentown. Your Financial Choices may discuss various financial-related topics and thus would like to offer the following disclosures. Lori Siebert is employed by Valley National Group, the Valley National Financial Advisors Group of Companies. Investments are offered through Valley National Investments Incorporated, member FINRA, SIPC. To ensure compliance with requirements imposed by the IRS, we inform you that any U.S. federal tax advice contained in this communication is not intended to or to be used for the purpose of avoiding penalties under the Internal Revenue Code or promoting, marketing, or recommending to another party any transaction or matter addressed herein. This show is for educational purposes only. For advice specific to your own situation, we recommend that you consult your CPA, CFP, or attorney.
Good evening, everyone. This is your host, Lori Siebert. I'm a CPA, CFP, and AEP on the web at yourfinancialchoices.com. You can listen online at wdiy.org, and you can tell friends and family as well that they can go to the website and click listen online and stream us, because sometimes we might not get to their listening area. So you're welcome to share this information. So wdiy.org. Also, if you maybe are a new listener to the show, like what you're hearing, and you think, gosh, what else might they have talked about on Your Financial Choices? You can go to either yourfinancialchoices.com or to the wdiy.org website and look for podcasts from prior shows. And lots of good information there. So we welcome you to visit. Today is March 12, 2014. The markets were mixed today. The Dow closing down at 16,340. The NASDAQ up at 4,323. And the S&P up at 1,868. Last week, we talked about portfolio creation considerations. And I had with me in the studio Kevin Brogius. I want to thank him for coming on and offering his time. It was great of him. Thank you. Tonight, we're taking your calls and your tax questions while we talk about income and how income gets taxed on your tax return. So if you have questions about your income tax, tonight is a great night. The lines are open. The phone number is 610-758-8810. That's 610-758-8810. Judy Ann is in the studio. She'll take your questions. And she will ask you to mute your radio so you can hear me without the delay. We can talk without confusion. If you'd like to talk live on air, that certainly is the most fun for me. If you're not comfortable talking live on air, you can give your question to Judy Ann. She'll write it down and she'll bring it into the studio. It's kind of a little bit of a wet night, so I imagine folks are in, or maybe you're still in your car driving in. I know I had a tough time coming over the bridge tonight. So if you have questions, 610-758-8810. You can also email questions through yourfinancialchoices.com, and I will respond to those as soon as I can. So tonight, again, we could do income tax questions all night if you like. That would be the most fun for me. I just fill in topics to, you know, in between calls. I'm a people person. I like talking to people. But again, if you're not comfortable, you could just give your question to Judy Ann and I can answer the question. It can be off air. All right. So what am I talking about tonight? Income. And how is income taxed? And the reason I want to talk about it is, you know, I think that if you have a better understanding of the types of income that there is, and some of you might already have some concept of this, but what I find quite often is people sometimes venture into new areas in their financial life. Maybe they didn't have savings before, now they have savings. Maybe they didn't invest before, now they're investing. Maybe they didn't have rental property before, and now they've decided to buy a rental property. So I'm going to talk about the different kinds of income that you can have on your tax return and what impact it can have on your return, and then how can we kind of adjust things on our tax returns. What can we do? What planning can we do around it to maybe take advantage of some of the income tax rates that are there? So ordinary income, you know, it's funny because I thought, well, maybe I'll get the definition for ordinary income tonight and, you know, announce that on the show. And so I look in the back of my little a quick finder guide and I look up ordinary income, and there really is no definition for ordinary income. So basically what I'll give you some examples, but basically what ordinary income means when we're talking about income taxes and income tax rates is, how do you add up your income? And usually software will do this all for you, but you need to understand it so you know how to manage it for tax efficiencies. But ordinary income on your tax return basically is going to have regular tax rates. When you go to look at a tax table and you see people say, oh, I was in the 10% bracket, the 15% bracket, the 25% bracket, those are ordinary income tax rates. And how your income will get taxed all depends on, after you add up all your income, take your deductions, your exemptions, what is your taxable income? If it's all ordinary, simply looking at the tax tables will give you what tax rates apply. I also have noticed sometimes people will think if they're in the 25% tax bracket that they're paying 25% income tax on their income. And it doesn't work like that. It's not a flat tax. You're not paying 25% if you make, you know, I have $100,000 of taxable income and you're in a 25% tax bracket. You're not paying $25,000 in taxes. It is a graduated, you know, there's different tax rate. Gosh, I just lost the word for it, but it's a table. So, for example, married filing joint. And again, we're looking at taxable income. This is after your deductions, your standard deduction, your itemized deduction, and your exemptions. When you come down to your taxable income, $0 to $17,850 is at 10%. And this is just an example. I'm trying to explain to you how there's a tiers. $17,851 to $72,500 is 15%. So even if I had taxable income up to $72,500, folks, I might have had page one income of $100,000. You know, it's after my deductions that I get the taxable income. So again, if I'm in the 15% tax bracket and I'm making $100,000, it does not mean I'm paying 15%. It could be much, much less than that after deductions and after the 10% bracket. So what I call that is an effective tax rate. So that's ordinary income. Then there's some advantages around capital gains tax rate, and I'll talk about that in just a minute. But we had some questions come in offline, and Freeman from Bethlehem said, has property in California that, this person has property in California that is rented out. Do you need to pay California state income tax? Well, Freeman, it all depends on if you're making any income on the property, but you definitely should file a California tax return with your federal return, and if you're a Pennsylvania resident, you're going to have a Pennsylvania return as well. The reason you want to file a state return for whatever rental property you have, if your state has an income tax, and I'm talking in general now, Freeman, for people who might have rental properties all over the country, the reason you want to report your rental property activity on that state return is sometimes you have losses. And those losses may accumulate, and you have passive losses that you might not have taken or not needed, and they get suspended. When you eventually sell that property, those suspended losses could get freed up, and you could use those losses eventually, maybe on a gain. Why I want to be careful about that statement, though, is different rules apply to different states. So, for example, Pennsylvania doesn't allow passive losses on rental property against any other category of income, and you can't suspend them and use them. California may piggyback off the federal numbers. Federal gives us a suspended passive loss. I think California does as well. So for me, it's about tracking that and making sure that California knows that we're cognizant of the fact that we have California property. So typically, whenever you have real estate rental property in another state, I always file the other state's tax return, whether I have income or a loss. Well, always with income, but even if I have a loss, I always file the other state's return. Okay, so I hope that helps. There's reasons to do that. I had another question come in, but I'm up to a break. So I believe this is Joe in Forks Township. Joe, I'll answer your question as soon as I am back from the break. If you have questions, 610-758-8810. 610-758-8810. Back in a minute.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including fee-based asset management. It all starts with personal goals and an understanding of risk tolerance, investment objectives, and the markets. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
You're listening to WDIY, Lehigh Valley's community NPR station. If you appreciate and value the programming we provide, including NPR's in-depth news coverage, our local public affairs programs, and the diverse mix of music we broadcast each day, please consider becoming a member. Membership is our most important source of revenue. We can't do it without you. You can make a secure donation online at wdiy.org. That's wdiy.org. And thanks for your support.
And we are back. This is your host, Lori Siebert. You're listening to Your Financial Choices. We are talking about, well, taxes as usual during tax season. If you have tax questions, you're welcome to give us a call. The phone number is 610-758-8810, 610-758-8810. We had a couple calls come in already. I really appreciate it. I love the questions. Joe from Forks Township had called and asked, last October 1st, he had a trip to the hospital and had bills that the insurance didn't cover. And he paid some of those bills in 2013 and some in 2014. And he has asked, when do I need to claim them? Is it all in 2013 or some for 2014? Joe, we are usually cash basis taxpayers, so we can take deductions if they are allowed, otherwise allowable by us, in the year we pay them. So if you had paid medical expenses in 2013, and some in 2014, the ones of 2014 you cannot claim until next year. So you've paid some bills that insurance didn't cover. You have some medical expenses. What you have to also keep in mind, though, Joe, is that the only way we get a deduction for medical expenses is if we itemize our deductions on Schedule A, and if those medical itemized deductions exceed a certain percent of our adjusted gross income. If you are over 65 or over, I should say, in 2013, the limitation is still 7.5% of our adjusted gross income. So if your medical expenses exceed 7.5% of your adjusted gross income, you can claim that amount that exceeds that limitation. If you're under 65, they raise the limitation to 10%. So if you have page one income of $100,000, 10% of that is $10,000, and your medical expenses out of pocket were $4,000, you're out of luck. You don't get that deduction. So while it's nice to think that we would be able to claim our medical expenses that we paid in cash out of pocket that insurance didn't cover, you may not be able to actually get to deduct them unless you fall under these rules. One other little caveat, Joe, sometimes what I find is people think that right now it's out of pocket and the insurance isn't covering it. Sometimes what happens is, especially if you're on Medicare and there's like a couple multiple providers or insurers, you may get a refund. So the only issue with that is sometimes if you have people who take medical deductions, they otherwise qualify, they take medical deductions for out-of-pocket 2013 cash basis taxpayer, and you take a deduction, that's all great. But if in 2014 now you get a refund, the medical insurance came back and said, you know what, we didn't think we were going to cover you, but now we're going to give you a refund. If you benefited from a deduction in a prior year, in like 2013, and now you have a refund for those amounts you paid in 2013, now you'll have to recognize that as income. So I just try to caution people on taking a deduction in 1 year if we know it's going to come back as income the next year. We have a call on line one. We have Alan from Forks Township. Alan, can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
Hi, how are you?
Fine.
Good. How can I help you?
I just started late last year from my employer, what I'm calling a health savings account, but my W-2 shows it as a flexible spending account.
Yes, very different.
And I'm actually started this, but I'm kind of ignorant of how this is affecting my health expenses and also my taxes.
Okay.
What I wanted to do, I wanted to save some money for my glasses and dental expenses and whatever, and then also save some tax money. But I really signed up for this not knowing what was going to happen and how I would have to deal with it.
Well, it sounds to me like you probably did everything right and understood it right. You just didn't get the name right. So, and I love when people do their flexible spending accounts. If an employer provides a flexible spending account, it allows you an opportunity to save money for medical expenses pre-tax, meaning your employer's not going to tax it.
And that was my full intention.
And it's great. The only issue is, I think it can be up to $2,500, but you have to decide how much do you think you're going to spend. And let's say you say, those glasses and those out-of-pocket expenses are only going to be $500. Then what, on a flexible spending account, what your employer does then is takes a payroll deduction to meet that $500, and they accumulate that like in a little bucket for you. And then
that's exactly what's happening, then, what I assumed was going to happen.
Okay, did they give you like a debit card or something to use?
No, there's only a few of us signed up, and we couldn't do the debit card deal.
Okay, so. But did you at least submit receipts for the expenses you had for 2013?
I didn't have any expenses last year. I started this late in the year,
uh-huh.
So my plan was to put some money aside and to get a few hundred dollars worth of eyeglasses this spring sometime.
Okay. Well, here's a little hiccup with the flexible spending accounts, though, Alan. You have to spend the money within a certain period of time, or it goes to the employer. That's the hiccup with flexible spending accounts.
Mm-hmm.
So if my only, I'm trying to think, they extended in the past, if you hadn't spent the money by December 31st, it went back to the employer. But usually, Alan, what happens, I'm trying to think when you actually signed up, usually there's like an open enrollment period in the fall.
And that's
and it doesn't start in the fall, though. It doesn't start until January, usually.
Yes, for some reason, ours started in November or whatever.
Okay. The only thing
I had four deductions last year and now continuing this year, of course.
Okay. I would just double check with your HR people if they help with that, because, again, I'm not used to seeing it start at the end of a year for that year. But normally what happened, the IRS, people would lose their money because they hadn't spent it. So I think they extended the time period that people could have to spend that flexible spending money or submit the receipts for the medical expenses they might have incurred. And my only issue right off the top of my head, Alan, is I don't recall if the extension extends the time that you can actually spend the money or just submit the receipts, because I always have people spend the money and submit the receipts in that year. So I don't to the next year.
And I don't know what, I only had $120 for last year, but for this year I plan to spend, I'm going to have $780 deducted. I'm going to spend that on my glasses and doctor visit and whatever. So as long as I spend that amount of money, I need then to somehow show that on my taxes that I've accomplished that spending.
I think what would happen is if you didn't spend the money, the employer will just take it. And then, yes, I think that it might come back on your W-2. That piece I'm going to have to check, too. But the wonderful thing about the flexible spending is it reduces your federal wages. It reduces your Medicare wages. It reduces your Pennsylvania wages. It's really a good deal if you do it the right way and make sure that you submit the medical expenses to document that you use the money for medical. So if I have a break, I'll try to, if you keep listening to the show, I'll see if I can quickly look up some of those extraneous little rules.
And I have my IRS tax guide 2013, publication 17 here, and there's there's 1,000 pages here, but I'm not finding what I need in there. So.
Okay, well, to tell you the truth, one of the things I was going to talk about when I talked about ordinary income and how we can affect things on our tax returns, flexible spending accounts was one of the items that I wanted to talk about anyway. So I didn't know about like into the next year. So I'll quickly try to look that up and then mention it if I find something on it, okay?
I'll keep tuned in, Lauren.
All righty. Thank you. Have a good night. I love the calls. Thank you for calling. The phone number is 610-758-8810. We will be back in just a minute.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including income tax preparation for individuals, businesses, estates, and trusts. Tax preparation involves more than putting numbers on a return. It requires planning. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
American folk and traditional music is a crazy quilt of colors and textures. In the tradition traces its many patterns and designs. Music handed down from generation to generation. In the tradition, Wednesday evening at 7, on WDIY-FM Lehigh Valley Community Public Radio.
And we are back. If you have questions, the phone number this evening is 610-758-8810. Ellen just called with a question about flexible spending account, which I will try to look up at the next break. He also mentioned health savings account. Health savings account is different. It's usually for folks who have high deductible health insurance plans, and sometimes the employer will contribute to it. Sometimes the employee can contribute to it. The employee may be able to do it on a pre-tax basis as well, which saves income tax. Sometimes, if you're not employed, you can still have your own health savings account for as an individual or with a family, and you get a deduction on page one of your return then if it follows all the rules, complies, that's a deduction on page one, and that also saves income tax. But again, that is with after-tax monies that people have. So we're talking about ordinary income. We're talking about different kinds of income on your tax return and understanding what the different kinds of income are so that you know how things are getting taxed. I went over ordinary income is basically that income that will be taxed at the regular tax rates. There's no special tax rate for ordinary income. What is ordinary income? Wages, interest, short-term capital gains. Short-term capital gains are those gains that occur on proceeds of sales of investments that you've made that you did not hold a year, so they're short term. Business income is ordinary income. Social Security can be taxed as ordinary income. And depreciation recapture. So for those folks who have businesses and take depreciation, if you sell something sooner than the life that you've depreciated it over, it's called and have a gain. Some of your depreciation will be recaptured. So those are the kinds of ordinary income we have. In a moment, I'll talk about tax-exempt income, capital gain income, and passive income. But I have a caller on line one. I have Frank in Salisbury. Frank, can you hear me?
Yes. Yes, hi. I can.
How are you?
All right.
Good. How can I help you?
Okay. I have to file taxes this year. I have two adult children living at home with me.
Okay.
Neither one of them works.
Okay.
They don't have employment. One, though, is disabled. And he receives a monthly check for his disability. So I guess you would call that his source of income, but it's disability.
Correct.
I'm divorced. I own my own home. And my question is, would I be able to claim them as dependents since I take care of all the household expenses?
Yes, you should be if you provide more than half their support. The Social Security income does not come into the calculation for the gross income support test. So there's certain tests you have to meet for dependents. They don't file a joint return with anyone else. They're a citizen. They're related to you. They lived with you more than half the year. Yes?
Yes, that's all true.
Okay. The age I think normally would matter, like if they weren't disabled, if they were a student, there's certain age test. If they're under 19, they would be your dependent. If they're under 24, but a full-time student. But there are special tests for disabled, too. And I would say if they're already receiving the disability Social Security, then they've met that test. And the Social Security does not come into play. So unless they're making other money, I think you should be good. Or do they have a job, work outside?
My son he's 26.
Mm-hmm.
And he's the one who's considered disabled, who is receiving the benefits. He does not have a job.
Okay.
My daughter, who's 22, if you could call it work, she gets a little bit of freelance income, not very much.
Okay.
It's negligible.
If it's under $3,900...
Yes.
Then you could still claim her as a dependent as long as you're providing more than half her support. Even if she's not a student, if her gross income is less than $3,900, then you should be able to claim her as a dependent as well. Okay?
All right. Well, in terms of support, I pay the mortgage. I pay the electric bill. I pay the internet bill. I pay for food.
Yep.
I guess you could call that more than...
I would say so.
All right. Very good.
Thank you for calling.
Thank you.
Okay. Have a good night. Bye. Okay, so thank you for the calls. The phone number, 610-758-8810, 610-758-8810. We've talked about ordinary income. Now, capital gain income. What is that? Capital gain income is, well, I should say, there's certain capital gain income that qualifies for a special tax rate. Remember, I mentioned earlier, there's something called a short-term capital gain. That's for assets that you held less than 1 year. That's just going to be the regular rate of tax. If you have something that you've held longer than a year and you've sold it and it's appreciated, those proceeds will have a special tax rate. It's called a capital gains tax rate. And the normal capital gains tax rate is 15%. If you happen to be in a 15% or lower tax bracket, that capital gains tax rate will be zero. Maybe you just go over the 15% bracket because of the gain, then part of that gain might be taxed at zero to the extent you're in the 15% bracket, and some of it might be taxed at 15. So it's a little funny calculation. If you use software, it's very easy to do. Once you get used to doing it, you kind of know how to do it pretty quick. But capital gains could have a zero rate or a 15% rate. For folks who are in the 39.6% tax bracket in 2013, there's a new capital gains tax rate call at 20%. So this is the typical capital gains that I'm talking about. I'm not getting into some of the conversation about special real estate rules and things like that. This is just regular appreciated investment assets on your Schedule D. So an extra benefit folks have is for something called a qualified dividend. So for people who invest in mutual funds or individual stocks that pay dividends, if they are, you know, domestic, there are certain qualifications that the IRS says, okay, these dividends are going to qualify for this special rate. It's a lot of mutual funds and a lot of individual stocks, most domestic corporations, it will apply, some foreign as well. So the qualified dividends, the dividends that those investments are paying you, will qualify for a lower tax rate at the same rate I just mentioned about the capital gains. So when you're looking at your income and when you're looking at how to invest, we're going to talk a little bit later in the show how you can look to see how the income on your tax return is being taxed and what can you do to maximize the tax savings for yourself using some good financial planning strategies. There is tax-exempt income that we see on tax returns. On the federal return, tax-exempt income comes from municipal bond investing. It might be a mutual fund. So when someone invests in munis, as we say, then that income that is generated will be tax exempt for federal purposes. It may not be taxable for state purposes unless that municipal investment that you have is investing in the state in which you reside. So if I live in Pennsylvania and I have Pennsylvania municipal bonds, then that would be tax exempt for Pennsylvania. New Jersey would have to be New Jersey bonds. If I own Virginia bonds and I live in Pennsylvania, then that would not be tax-free for Pennsylvania. So just because it's tax-exempt for federal doesn't mean it's tax-exempt for Pennsylvania. And sometimes we have things that are tax-exempt for Pennsylvania that aren't tax-exempt for federal. And what would that be? Anything to do with U.S. Treasuries, U.S. Treasury interest, savings bond interest, T-bills, that kind of thing. U.S. Treasury bond interest is not taxable for Pennsylvania, but it is taxable for federal. So make sure you understand what kind of income you have. We're at the half hour. We'll take a quick break. We'll be back in just a minute. If you have questions, the phone number is 610-758-8810. Back in a minute.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including estate planning and tax preparation, especially for Pennsylvania and New Jersey residents subject to state inheritance tax reporting. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
Spread the word about your organization or business to a well-informed audience. Become an underwriter with WDIY. Our lineup of NPR news and locally produced music programs reaches thousands of locally engaged listeners each day. Underwriting on WDIY is an affordable way to enhance your image and to provide information about your services to people who care. For more information, visit wdiy.org.
And we are back, and I hope Alan is still listening. Alan, I did quickly just find something that the IRS did change the health flexible spending account use or lose rule. It says it clarifies the transition relief for 2013 and 2014. So there were some things that were up in the air for a little while. So this was updated, it looks like, on November 12th. It said that they are allowing a $500 annual carryover. A $500 annual carryover of unused contributions, provided that cafeteria the plan offering the health flexible spending account does not incorporate the grace period rule. So you just want to make sure that that would apply to you, but it looks like there's a possibility that you could carry over any unused amount. But I am just curious too that with your plan, because it started in the fall, I don't know if you're on a fiscal year or if there's some different way that it worked for you. It just seemed a little confusing to me that you would start in the fall for last year. Again, normally it starts in the fall for the next calendar year. So just double check on that. So hopefully not all is lost. Just make sure you understand the rules. We don't want anyone losing the benefits of the flexible spending account. Okay, so good luck with that. Folks, this is your host, Lori Siebert. I think I just started talking without saying who I was. You are listening to Your Financial Choices, and we are talking about what kind of income you have on your tax return, how it is taxed, and then for you to understand how income is taxed will help you do better planning for your tax return. We are also taking questions on income tax. The phone number is 610-758-8810. We had a question come in from Ted in Bath. He purchased a rental property and held it for more than a year, and then he sold it. How is depreciation calculated? Based on what you paid or based on market value? He said he bought it for $20,000 and sold it for $40,000. Well, that sounds like a pretty good deal there, Ted. And it also looks like you held it for more than a year. What happens, Ted, is when you originally purchased the property, you would have established the basis for the property when you put it into service. And when you put a property into service, it's the lower of cost or market. It's if you, let's say, maybe had a property that you didn't rent right away and then you turned it into a rental, or maybe you just purchased the rental. It's basically the basis is going to be the lower of cost or market. And you start renting the property, you take depreciation, and it's residential rental property, I'm thinking. over time, you take depreciation, you're getting a deduction for that. Maybe you could use some of that on page one. I actually have a whole section of the outline tonight to talk about rental properties, and I may not get to that, but I think on March 26th, we're going to do a more in-depth show on rental real estate and things like that. But basically, if you benefited, Ted, from taking depreciation and taking a loss, and you got that loss on page one of your return against ordinary income, then to the extent you have a gain, the depreciation will come back not as capital gain, but as ordinary income to you. So your $20,000 gain is going to be made up of two different kinds of income. One will be capital gain, and one part of it will be depreciation recapture to the extent that you have gain because your basis that you paid for it gets reduced by the amount of recapture of depreciation. So if you paid $20,000 for a property and you depreciated it over a couple years and you took, let's say, $1,000 of depreciation. So now the property's basis is no longer 20, it's now 19 because you took some losses. You took a $1,000 loss. So your basis is 19,000. So if you sold it for 40, you have a $21,000 gain. A thousand of that is because of depreciation recapture. That's going to come back in as ordinary. And then the rest of it will be capital gains. Okay? So I hope that you can figure that out. If you have good software, you should be able to. But again, the gain will be based on what you depreciated the property on. And you should have allocated some of the cost to land as well. So that's just a little FYI, a little more complicated. Jeff, we also have a call on line one. Okay, hello, this is Lori. Can I help you? Greg, can you hear me?
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah,
hi.
I can hear you.
How are you?
Good.
Good. How can I help you?
I have a W-2 being issued from the Long Island Railroad for a non-qualified deferred comp plan.
Okay.
So the income shown in box 1 and box 11.
Uh-huh.
And I need to know if it would be taxable in Pennsylvania. Now, I know normally you would go back and see if it was previously taxed in Pennsylvania, but I lived and worked in New York and have retired here.
Gosh, this is a little interesting because here's the problem, Greg. Pennsylvania changed their rules on deferred comp in 2005.
Okay.
And what they used to do, let me just explain the rules just a little bit to see if we can help answer it. What it used to be is deferred comp pre-2005 was always taxed in Pennsylvania.
Right.
You didn't get a deduction for it. So when the money came out in, you know, when you were retired and now you're getting to deferred comp, Pennsylvania wouldn't tax it because they already taxed it. So you had like a basis in it.
Right.
So then in 2005, they said, we're going to start following what the federal does. And if the federal doesn't tax it, we're not going to tax it. But when it comes out, it's all going to be taxable. So we have a mix of the rules for Pennsylvania. And now what Pennsylvania says is when you have deferred comp, we have to look to see what your basis is in it. Did you pay tax on this money already? Well, you earned this while you were in New York. I don't know. I'd have to go back and check to see if I could find that. I would almost say the position would be that Pennsylvania might say that you don't have basis in it unless you could show that you already previously paid tax on it. Did you pay tax on it in New York if it was deferred? Pennsylvania.
No, and then New York has come out and ruled that they're not going to tax it when it comes out.
Right. I think that.
So I just didn't know how Pennsylvania would look at it if it's not earned income in the current year and it wasn't subject to the tax in the past because you weren't a resident, what the situation would be.
Right. I'd have to go double check on that. I'd have to do a little further research. If you want to shoot me that question through the website, if you can, yourfinancialchoices.com, I can look that up and see if I can find something for you and shoot you an email back. It's a W-2 that your employer or the former employer issued to you. Did they put anything in the state wages? Did they say Pennsylvania?
Yes, they did.
Did they say Pennsylvania wages?
Yep, and they defaulted to that.
Okay.
I don't know if that's right or not.
Well, that could be a clue. So they put a dollar amount under PA and then a dollar amount as well.
Right.
Yeah, that could be a clue of that. unfortunately. But I can check if you want to shoot me an email, and I'll shoot you one back.
I will definitely do that.
Okay. Thanks, Greg. Thanks for calling.
Thank you.
Take care. Bye-bye. Bye. Wow, we've had some really interesting questions tonight. I appreciate the calls. The phone number is 610-758-8810, 610-758-8810. So we're talking about different kinds of income on your return. And interestingly, to Greg's point as well, that we can have income treated one way for federal and another way for Pennsylvania, or maybe even whatever other state you might be living in. It gets a little complicated. And I know certain states allow certain deductions if you had employer plans that you may have earned money on prior to moving to their state. I think Virginia allows like a deduction for folks who maybe came from a state that did not get that benefit. They let you have like a little deduction. So it can get very complicated when you switch states, which in fact, I think I had a show on that once where I had mentioned, be very careful when you're deciding about where to retire, because you have to understand the income tax rules. You certainly don't want to mess up what may be the benefit you might have had or the consequence you had from the state you were living in and working in, and then you move to a state that will either give you a benefit or a consequence. So the best thing is to find a state to work in where they give you a benefit, then move to a state that won't tax you on it. And I'm not sure Pennsylvania is that state. So we'll have to look into that, and I'll certainly try to get back to Greg with more information on that. So we talked about ordinary income. We talked about capital gain income. We talked about non-taxable income. Oh, we talked about tax-exempt income, like municipal interest. There's also non-taxable income, such as Roth distributions. So if you have a Roth IRA and you take out a qualified distribution, that's non-taxable income. There is also something called a return of principal. Sometimes people will think they're getting, you know, dividends, and it might not be a dividend, folks. It might be a return of your original investment. That's not taxable to you because it is a return of your original investment. But what it's doing, unbeknownst to you maybe, is actually reducing your cost basis in that investment. So if I invest in a master limited partnership, I invest $10,000 and I'm getting this money and I think I'm getting dividends, it might just be a return of my principal. I get $1,000 and I say, oh yeah, I made $1,000 on that. Well, actually, maybe I didn't, and it'll show on the K-1 that you get come tax time. So what happens is that original investment of $10,000, if indeed you just received a return of your principal, now your cost basis is only $9,000. So now if I sell my investment for $10,000, you say, oh, I'm selling my investment for $10,000 and I paid $10,000 for it, I don't make any money. Well, you got $1,000 of your money back. So you actually might have had a gain of $1,000. So watch out for that. So non-taxable income could be Roth distributions, could be return of principal. You can have return of principal on annuities as well. And sometimes your Social Security could be non-taxable. Folks who maybe just live on Social Security and don't have any other income, their Social Security isn't going to be taxable. I also want to mention to that caller earlier tonight, talking about taking a dependent on their return. If you have a son or someone who's getting disability income from Social Security, you don't report that income on your return. They would report it on their return if they had any other income. Maybe they don't even have to file. So watch out for that. And you also want to make sure that you don't taint any benefits that they're otherwise eligible for by claiming them as a dependent. I don't know if that would impact. So you want to pay attention to that. So Social Security may or may not be taxable depending on your other income. So the more income you have on your return, the more likely some of your Social Security might be taxed. So you want to watch out for that. Something called passive income and passive losses. We had some callers talk about rental properties earlier. Passive income can be a number of things. Income that, and it could be income that ends up getting taxed, but the losses aren't deductible. What's with that? Well, passive income, basically conduct of any trade or business in which the taxpayer does not materially participate. Any rental activity is a passive activity, whether or not the taxpayer materially participates. And there are special rules for rental activities, so I can talk more about those after the break. And then I hope to get to talking about some other quick ways to kind of manage some of this income on your tax return. We're coming up to our last break. Folks, if you have questions, you're welcome to call 610-758-8810 or through the website yourfinancialchoices.com. Back in a minute.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services including portfolio management, tax return preparation, and financial planning for the accumulation years, retirement years, and estate distribution. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
And you are listening to WDIY Allentown, 88.1 FM and WDIY.org, serving the Lehigh Valley. The time now is 6:45. Now back to your financial choices with our host, Lori Siebert.
Thank you, Jeff. Folks, the phone number this evening, 610-758-8810. And I realize I'm just kind of like in a constant state of frantic right now. So I have to apologize if I'm talking super duper fast because I don't even realize I'm doing it. There's so much in my brain I'm trying to get out. And so folks, if you need help getting things out of your brain or sorting through, you're welcome to call 610-758-8810. Taking tax questions, you can call, talk on air or off air, whatever's more comfortable, and I'll do my best to get an answer to you quickly. Obviously, there are some things I don't know off the top of my head, and I have to look them up, but I love researching. So, and I love learning as well. So, we're talking about different kinds of income on your return. We talked about ordinary income, capital gain income, tax-exempt income, non-taxable income, passive income. Passive income, basically, when I'm talking about passive income, for the most part, what I see typically for folks, where I see this the most, is with rental properties for people who are renting for whatever reason, just some extra investment income or whatever. And typically, I don't see passive income with the rental properties. I'm usually seeing losses. So be careful when you take on a rental property because you might think you're going to get all these losses, but you may not get to take the losses, at least not currently, if you have so much other income, because the IRS limits the amount of passive loss that we can take on a rental property. So in essence, the IRS says we can't take passive losses on our return against other income, against ordinary income. That's the normal rule. But there is a special rule for rental properties. The IRS says, okay, if you have a rental activity, you may not be materially participating in it, but you must have active participation. They will allow up to $25,000 of passive losses against non-passive income. And folks, what am I talking about when I say non-passive income? Basically, that's ordinary income. Remember, I said ordinary income doesn't get any special tax rates. It's our regular standard rates looking at the tax table. So this is one of the advantages people like rental properties. They say, oh, I can have a loss and my investment property can, you know, earn value and appreciate over time while I'm getting these deductions like depreciation and mortgage interest and repairs and maintenance. You do have to have some rental income too, folks. You can't put a rental property into service and not rent it. You have to have it available and ready to rent and be advertising it for rent. So typically you have some rental income, but usually because of the depreciation and the mortgage interest you might have on it, quite often there is a loss on that property. So the IRS says they will let you on a rental activity that you have active participation in, let you take up to $25,000 passive loss in a current year against basically ordinary income, such as wages, things like that, if you're within the income limitations. So here's the piece. Before you get into a rental property, you want to make sure it's going to apply to you, because if you think you're going to offset some of your other income, you may not be able to. If income exceeds $100,000 on page one, if income exceeds $100,000, there's a reduction in that $25,000 allowance. At $150,000 on page one of your return, it's completely phased out. So if you and your spouse are both working, you have good jobs, you say, gosh, we would really like to bring down our income. Well, if your page one income is over $100,000 or even worse, over $150,000, you may not get any of that loss. What happens then? It gets suspended. Remember my caller earlier with the California real estate? I said, if you have losses that you cannot currently use, they get suspended and they build up and they build up until maybe you get to use them because maybe your income comes down. Maybe you have other passive income that you could use that passive loss against. Or you now finally sell it and the passive losses that have been suspended get completely freed up. In the year that you have an entire disposition, now maybe we're recognizing gain. I think earlier I forgot who it was who had the gain, Ted. If you then eventually have a gain and you had any suspended losses, now they get freed up in that year. So that's kind of a nice little bonus. And you really want to pay attention to how much passive losses you have suspended so that you can plan if you do sell the property, are you going to have other income to absorb that loss? What I really get frustrated with is if I see someone who decides to sell their rental property after they've retired and they have no other income, well then, how is that passive loss helping us if we have hardly any other income? I like people to sell the rental real estate, well, when it's a good time to sell, but also when they can take full advantage of those suspended passive losses against other ordinary income. Then there's no limitation. So I could have, you know, $500,000 of income on page one. If I have a suspended passive loss of, let's say, $50,000 over all these years, and I do an entire disposition, I can take that loss in full in the year I dispose of the property. So you got to know what kind of income you have on your return, and you got to know how it works. You have to know the limitations. You have to know the tax rates that apply. If you understand some of these concepts, it's so exciting to be able to plan around them. And sometimes it means doing some projections, kind of saying what's going to happen in year one, year two, year three. You can't forget about depreciation recapture. That's a little pill that's hard to take. People don't realize it. They don't think about it. They're very excited about taking depreciation every year if it's reducing their income. They just don't remember that when they then go to sell that property, if they sell it at a gain, some of that gain will be converted to ordinary income to the extent we have depreciation recapture. So watch out for that. There's special rules when we're talking about passive income for real estate professionals, but it's a little bit too complicated to talk about tonight. And there are also other types of passive income that we might have from limited partnerships, investments that people make in limited partnerships, also a little bit more complicated than we can talk about tonight. So let's talk about some other strategies we can use when we're trying to affect how the income on our tax return gets taxed. First, the phone number one more time. I could probably squeeze in one more question. 610-758-8810. 610-758-8810. So I mentioned that wages were ordinary income. And you heard our caller earlier talking about the flexible spending account. I believe that was Alan talking about the flexible spending account. So what ways can we reduce our ordinary income on our tax return? Well, what ways can we reduce our wages? We can reduce our wages by putting money into our employer's retirement account, like a 401k or a 403b. We can reduce our wages by participating in a flexible spending account that is available for medical expenses, but it's also available for dependent care expenses. So if you have children that you have in daycare and you pay a certain amount of money, you can opt into flexible spending accounts if your employer offers them, usually during open enrollment period in the fall of the year before. And Then you get deductions out of your paycheck for the flexible spending account for medical and or dependent care expenses. And then you submit receipts for those and get reimbursed. So it works out pretty well. The child care you actually have to incur before you submit the receipts, and you have to actually build up the money for that. Medical expenses, however, if you have a big medical expense in January and you haven't accumulated all the money until year end, you still can use the flexible spending account. That's the little hiccup for the employer. The employer goes out on a limb for you, the employee, if they haven't taken all the money out of your paycheck yet and you have a big medical expense, you actually can submit for medical expenses prior to you fully funding your flexible spending account for medical expense. Another option for folks, if your employer has a deferred compensation plan, it's so interesting to me that all the phone calls tonight kind of tied into all of the items that we're talking about tonight. There's something called deferred compensation. So you can defer some of your wages in your pay today and wait to get it until you retire. But then when you retire, it's taxed to you similarly to wages. It's just a little bit different. The reason people do it is because while they're working, they might be in a higher income tax bracket, and then they defer some of their income, not all of their income, such that when they retire, they're receiving a stream of income, but much smaller than their wages. So therefore, they're in a lower tax bracket. So you defer hoping to be in a lower tax bracket in the future. So deferred compensation will lower your federal and now Pennsylvania taxable wages today. Certain deferred comp programs for Pennsylvania may not work this way, so you have to be careful. Pennsylvania is not very straightforward with the deferred comp plans. In fact, I think it is quite complicated. So hopefully your employer understands it and does it the correct way, and you have to make sure that you understand how it's going to get taxed on the other side. Watch your W-2 if you're in a deferred comp plan. See what your federal wages are, see what your Pennsylvania wages are, and make sure you understand the difference so that you know how that income is going to be taxed to you or not taxed to you when you retire. Social Security. I told you Social Security could be ordinary income or it might not be taxable. Well, the most that your Social Security income will be taxed, the most would be 85% includable. That's if you're in a higher threshold. If you have no other income, I told you it might not be taxable at all. The rest of the people are going to be kind of maybe in a gray area, and there's like worksheets and different thresholds that you have to meet to know how much your Social Security could be taxed. So if you can, if you're in that kind of area where sometimes it's taxed, sometimes it's not, or you're on the threshold, if you put another dollar on your return, another 50 cents of your Social Security is taxed, you want to look to see if there's other ways to control the other income on your return. And sometimes you can delay collecting Social Security too. So you want to make sure you understand when you start collecting Social Security, what other income on your return will you have, and will it then subject your Social Security to taxation? Business income, people can do retirement plans, solo 401ks, look at accelerating depreciation methods such as Section 179. You can look at your portfolios and see if you can allocate more away from fixed income and more into equities if that meets your risk tolerance and would give you more tax advantages on qualified dividends and capital gains. Okay, folks, so that is it in a nutshell. Thank you for everyone who called tonight. I really appreciate it. And I'll look for emails from folks if I need to follow up with an answer to a question. If I don't think I have to say if anymore. So next week, we are going to talk about financial planning, putting your tax return to work for you. I want to thank the listeners. Thank Judy Ann. Thanks, Jeff, for being here. Stay tuned for In the Tradition Folk Music with Tom Druckenmiller. Remember, pay attention, be proactive, not reactive. Make the best of your financial choices and have a great week.